We are live.
Live.
Hey, kids. Look at us. We're fancy. We're live.
We're live and alive. And alive.
Semi-alive, I guess. Semi-alive. Semi-alive. The East Coast and the West Coast and the whole wide world is here tonight on Booze Dancing Entertainment Network live stream tonight. Isn't that cool? It's good to say.
Yeah. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good one.
We are going to be talking to a good friend tonight. And we're going to have cocktails, and we're going to talk a really cool book, and it's Cocktail Wednesday, so we should be drinking cocktails, right?
Sure. All right. So hold that thought. Let me just roll our quick little show intro.
Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a Booze Dancing Entertainment Network podcast featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy beverages. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
We are back and less smelly as usual.
I washed. I bathed. Did you bathe?
I bathed. This week. It's only Wednesday.
It's not Saturday night. Isn't that what they say in the movies?
What do they say in the movies?
Remember they said in the old movies, like, oh, it's Saturday night. Time to take a nap.
Because that's what kids did. That's what the kids did. You had to say on water, on hot water. So we are back again. We got a really fun night tonight. We are getting together with an old friend. And how are you guys doing? You guys doing good? Yes, Mikey is promoting the book already. Yes, well done. Well done, Mikey.
So
we are live. By the way, we are live on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, boozedancing.com. Where else? Where else?
I think LinkedIn, too.
LinkedIn. What the hell is that? And MySpace and AOL.
It's the one social media that I should actually use, but don't.
Right. I hear there's some issues with it, so don't. Be careful. Security issues. Whatever.
Sure.
Whatever.
Sure. Steal my life, please.
Really? No kidding. Exactly.
Yes, please.
So I'm not sure if this is really like a watch what we watch when we drink episode, or maybe it's a one book, two cocktails episode. It's a lot of things, right? We're talking to a good friend. It's one drink, one book, one friend. I don't know.
As many drinks as we felt like making.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
And the neat thing about this thing is you will be able to download it as a podcast at a future date. As soon as our editor gets his thumb out of his
thumb up.
Wallet.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, that's his wallet. Thumbs yes. Up. Oh, thumbs up right there. You can put comments in the comments section if you'd like to do that. We'd be happy to take questions, and you can send us cards and letters as usual. So should we bring Andre in a second?
Yeah, let's almost
Hold on one second. Let me give a little intro to the guy.
Okay.
Tonight we have a special guest. It's Andre Darlington, award-winning beverage columnist, former bar owner, restaurant critic, and a celebrated author of various cocktail books, including Booze Cruise, co-author of Booze and Vinyl, Volumes 1 and 2, The New Cocktail Hour, Batman, the official Gotham City cocktail book, and Bar Menu, just to name a few. And he is a frequent guest of ours. We love him so much. And tonight he is here with us to talk about his latest, the unofficial Big Lebowski cocktail book. Over 50 mixed drink recipes inspired by the cult classic. And I think all of us are lucky enough to have a copy of it. Ta-da! Wee-dee! And now we are going to run a very special intro for Andre. Look at that. We're all so good. We're like Carol Merrill.
One final thought.
One final thought.
If he was Andre Darlington, he can go with he could use ADD as his initials.
Oh, that would be good.
Right?
And you kind of have to have ADD to do this, don't you?
The dude has ADD, right?
The way he turns them out. Well, we have a little intro for Andre. We're going to run it and then bring him in and then start chatting and drinking.
Do it.
We're back.
Yes.
We are back. You like the picture of the three of us at the end there? That was cool.
That was good, right?
You guys in these intros, they get better every time.
Hey, can I have Buscemi? Because, you know, my mom's maiden name was Buscemi.
Sadly, really? Sadly, I think I'm John Goodman now.
You're always yelling. You're always yelling. So
funny. I'm about
You're
the
always talking about your time in Nome.
Andre, welcome. You're
Thanks
back.
Thanks for having me on. It's great to see you guys again.
Oh, that was last time was Bar Menu, I think, right?
I think it was, right? Yeah. That was last fall, so I haven't seen you guys for a while. Happy 2020.
Holy
You're a globetrotting man too.
Yeah. So you have been traveling all over the place, haven't you? Is that all book tour related?
It's kind of book tour related. I just did 8 cities that were almost all of them were in the Book Booze Cruise in 2019. I hadn't really gone on a foreign, booze cruise since the pandemic. So it was really great to go to some cities, this spring. I slid it in right before all the tourists arrive, and it got too hot. It was fantastic. So I kind of went from all the way from Dublin over the north through Copenhagen and Stockholm, and then down through Prague, Vienna, Budapest, and ended up in Tel Aviv and then coming home. So it was a fantastic little jaunt, little spring 2020. Yeah, nice.
Awesome trip.
Yeah.
So you got a new book out.
I have a new book out. Surprise to you guys, right?
So and it came out in March, and you were telling us earlier that this is like not a normal time for you to get a book out.
It's a little early. March was a little early. I mean, people are still waking up. I feel like all of America kind of steps out on their porch at some point in April and is like, oh, it's cocktail time. And before that, everybody are still doing their resolutions. But it's because the book is timed with the 25th anniversary of The Big Lebowski. Wow, those 25 years went way too fast. And the book came out basically the day that the movie was released in March of 1998.
Got it.
So the book's been out. I know that the movie has been in a number of theaters across the U.S. They were re-promoting this after 25 years as a re-release. So it's been super fun. This is the most joyful book I've worked on, you guys. I mean, I've done a few books, and they're all fun. But this one is just laugh out loud funny. If you've had a chance to page through it, the illustrations are great. They're done by a woman named Jennifer Hines in Amsterdam. And they were sending me the proofs of the illustrations. And I was just howling, you know. And the movie, I hadn't seen, when I got the, when we talked with the publisher about doing this, I'd seen the movie, but it hadn't been that recent. And it was phenomenal to revisit the movie.
I think on your website, you have this really great intro to the book, The Big Lebowski, the hilariously quirky comedy thriller about bowling, avant-garde art, nihilistic Austrians, white Russians, and a guy named the Dude is a cult classic. And it goes on to say, now with the official, unofficial Big Lebowski cocktail book, you can relive the movie one drink at a time. In addition to 50 signature drinks, this beautifully designed unofficial cocktail book includes food and song pairings that align with the major characters that have become life lessons and spouted advice within popular culture. That says it all. I mean, that's it. I mean, that's really a great way to put the whole book in.
It's amazing what a cottage industry this movie has created. You know, my book is book 1,000.
on the subject.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You go out to Amazon and there's like the Tao of Dude, and there's all these books that are, talk about the philosophy or all this stuff of the Dude. It really is this kind of cottage industry. So it was really fun to dig into all that. You know, I have friends that were ordained in the Church of Dude and got married. It's incredible how this movie pervaded, and especially I think the characters. The principal characters really invaded American culture.
So was it a favorite book of yours? How does this idea come?
The movie?
Like this book? The movie. Was it, or did it, does it happen from the publisher end, or does it come out of your crazy head?
Yeah, it was an editor at Quarto. And actually, this is my first book with them. They do beautiful books, and they reached out about the idea of doing a Big Lebowski book. And actually, when they first reached out about doing it, it wasn't necessarily unofficial. They were working on having it be a Big Lebowski book. But what's interesting, and I think shocking to people, is that Lebowski wasn't that great of a success when it came out. I saw it in the theaters. I think many people did. It was a little, it's heady, it's funny, it's nerdy, it's a little confusing. I remember watching it for the first time and loving it, but thinking that was a lot, you know? And I think that confused American audiences. The Coen brothers were coming off of a huge hit, and they used that cachet to do this movie. And it was, I don't know if it was a flop, but it didn't do as well as people had hoped. And when that happens, everyone scurries away from the project. So the holding companies and everybody kind of runs away from the money loss, I guess. Just how they explained to me. So there was there's actually no entity to license it, right? So if you're a huge hit, you're like, oh, we have a holding company and we're going to sell merch from this thing. And if you're not, it's like, that never happened. Just kidding. That's not on my resume. We're going to run away. It was interesting. They really tried really hard to get this to be official. And then they basically discovered that there was no there.
That is such a weird story.
Isn't it funny? And it's so funny because the movie is so famous now. And I think in residuals, obviously, people made their money back. Yeah. In global sales, in video store sales, and all that stuff. Because it really is a movie that, more than so many other movies that you can think of, has a whole cottage industry around it. And, you know, people sell dude dolls and stuff still 25 years later. So that's pretty, it's pretty remarkable what the Coen brothers did. Of course, they went on to be extraordinarily successful in other films. And I think that really helped lift the Lebowski. If you're looking at these two guys, you know, and if you're seeing, you know, 10 years later, when people were getting into newer Coen brother movies, they were going back and also watching the Lebowski. So it really crosses these generational lines. But it is a movie that it's shocking how many people haven't seen it still, which I'm jealous of, because I'm like, you're going to go home and watch this movie for the first time? It's a life change. That's like watching Star Wars for the first time, you know? Like, lucky you.
Cult classic is weird, because I don't think of it as a cult classic. I think of like Rocky Horror as a cult classic. Right, but this really is it's like a different kind of cult classic.
I feel like it's very mainstream, and yet, you know, apparently
culty.
It wasn't as mainstream as we think.
So you got 50 cocktails you came up with, right? And this book is about the size of the books that you put out. This is your thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, some of them are bigger. The Booze and Vinyls are like 170 cocktails. So really ginormous.
This is in the 50, 60
cocktails in here. This is sort of, you know, in the range that the most of the presses do. Batman is certainly in line with more like 50. I think we might have reached 60 in there. But yeah, it was kind of, I was telling people, you know, our friend, you know, colleagues of mine, I was like, well, you know, I'm in talks to do this Big Lebowski movie. They were like, well, how are you going to do a whole book of White Russians? And I'm like, no, it's the characters, it's the scenes. The Lebowski, which is so fun about it, is the Coen brothers really know their movie history. They know their noir. So, you know, I think of the Big Lebowski as a noir 1940s film or story that's sunny, stoner. You know, they took all the dark elements and made it funny, and they took the femme fatale and they took the reclusive millionaire, and they took the money bag, and they took the gangsters that come to your door, but they just mixed it all up and made it hilarious. You know, but it's fun because I'm working with Southern California, and I'm working with noir, and I'm working with kind of 70s, and, you know, because that's the dude is clearly like grew up in the 70s, you know, and there's so many great characters. You know, I immediately, you know, we do a little back and forth when it's like, hey, should we do the Big Lebowski book? You want to send in 5 cocktails that we could look, you know, the higher ups can look at or whatever, you know? And I'm like, yeah, Walter, he's a Polish extraction, and he's a Vietnam veteran of Polish extraction who converted to Judaism. So we're in Schlivitz already, right? That, you know, we have to be in Schliv. We're doing Schliv and Ginger for him. The dude, I had a moment where I was like, I do need to put in a bunch of White Russians in this book. Let's do a little book of White Russians within this book. And there's a point where the dude is in the backseat of the limousine and he says, you know, you can call me the dude or El Duderino or his dudeness, or, you know, he has all these names for himself. So I was like, well, that would be really funny to do each one of those, each one of those personalities as a white Russian. You know, so his dudeness is the elevated version. El Duderino is the Southern Californian version with horchata instead of cream. You know, we're going to do a young Jeffrey because the dude is these kind of different characters within in the movie. You know, we're going to do a young Jeffrey, and that's when he was ambitious and had a milk punch, you know, wanted to do a milk punch. you know, that, just like just being funny with it. Maude was going to have a Manhattan. Knox Harrington, who's this, you know, they basically a petulant layabout who goes to Venice Biennale. So there's just a lot of, like, you know, Carl Hungus. Bunny actually. So there's actually cocktails that we see in the movie. The dude drinks White Russians 9 times in the film. You have to commend him for his dedication in every occasion to drinking these. And then we actually do see a blue Hawaii when we first meet Bunny at the mansion. He's drinking a blue Hawaii
at the pool. Yeah. Pool.
So there's like, you know, two cocktails to work off, and then the rest are just sort of made up based on context. And I have to tell you, it was just so much fun. I did, of course, get my hands on the script, which helps a lot. And there's musical, you know, there's music pairings with all the cocktails. Yeah. And they are basically triggered from, you know, the cocktails are people, but also moments that are funny. And so basically in the script, I could pair, you know, what the soundtrack was triggered. And that's really just, we're soundtracking the book, or we're soundtracking the movie, to the cocktails in there.
Are you watching the movie as you're doing them this endlessly, or are you looking at the script more, or maybe both?
A little bit of both. I definitely, you know, the moment that this started to come in, I was like, let's watch this movie. Let's maybe watch it twice. Right. So I watch it. I'm taking notes. I'm a lot of it is hearing. When I hear somebody say something interesting or there's an interesting theme or scene, I think, well, that has to be a cocktail, you know? So, you know, when he's in the bathtub and he says, nice marmot, you know, it's like, cocktail. I mean, nice marmot. If you went into a bar and you were expecting a Lebowski menu, I always think in terms of, you know, what if a great bar had a Lebowski menu? What would be the drinks, you know? So I'm always thinking of stuff like that. And, you know, it turns out I turned that nice marmot into sort of a standard drink, but then you do a Fernet, you know, plunge into it. So the Amaro is the marmot coming into your drink.
That's funny. I wrote down a couple of names. The names are just amazing. And they're right from the movie, right? The Royal Wee, Let's Go Bowling, the Pomeranian, Bowling with Jesus, Modestly Priced Receptacle.
Such a great name.
It's a great name.
Cocktail, too.
Yes, they all are. They really all are. If you didn't know the movie and you saw this list of names for cocktails, you'd think, wow, this is a really interesting list of stuff without even knowing what's in them. Right? It'd be some like hipster bar.
It totally wrote itself, you know, because it's just such a joyful movie. It is truly so funny. And then what was, you know, what really got me interested was the depth that the Coen brothers put in their films. You know, the references kind of go on forever. You know, you find out reading the script that Fawn is Fawn Knutson. She's from Moorhead, Minnesota. Moorhead, Minnesota is sister city to Fargo. There could be a Knutson's from Fargo. Okay. If you look up Modest, so the dance quintet, right? One of the weirdest moments in a movie this famous, you know, the neighbor is having a dance quintet and he goes to take some notes and the music is Modest Mussorgsky, Pictures at an Exhibition. And I think, why that song? I mean, other than it's funny, I mean, it's just quirky, but I Google Modest Mussorgsky and the picture that comes up is the dude. There's a 19th century painting of Mussorgsky in a robe with the same beard.
Get out.
That's so funny.
And I'm wait like, a minute. Wait, I'm looking this up. What is this now?
Google it. I'm like, these guys, it goes on forever.
What's it again?
It's Modest Mussorgsky. Modest Mussorgsky is M-U-S-O-R ski.
Redone in the 1980s or 70s by Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Yes.
Holy crap.
For your little musical trivia.
Yeah.
It just kind of goes and goes and goes, you know.
That's funny.
The depth of these guys. And, you know, of course, the acting is just unbelievable. Julianne Moore is also one of the great characters, you know, one of this feminist artist, you know, sort of based on, I found out this woman named Carol Schneeman, who wrote who was an avant-garde feminist artist in the 70s and 80s, and had her most famous work was called Meat Joy. if you go and YouTube it, I apologize in advance, you'll never be able to unsee it. and you know, I make that like the meatballs and stuff.
Googling now.
And it just is such a funny. And of course, Amy Mann makes a cameo in it, you know, as the girlfriend who actually was the one who lost her toe.
Flea. Don't forget Flea.
Oh, it's just a wonderful.
On that note, before we get into the movie more in depth, we need to have a drink.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, part of this was we were going to be making a cocktail from the book or two.
Yeah.
Mike, did you make one, Mike?
I did.
What did you make?
I made the Nihilist.
Yes.
The Nihilist.
Makes sense.
2 ounces of rye whiskey. And I happened to have a bottle of Widow Jane that I was looking to finish. Oh. So I had just 2 ounces that I left.
Nice.
And it's Goldschlager, a 1/4 ounce of Goldschlager, 2 dashes of Angostura bitters, and I didn't garnish with the orange peel. Fruit's bad for you. So I saw that, and I'm like, you know what? That actually sounds like a pretty good drink. Let me make that.
And you're liking it?
I made one too.
Oh, did you really?
I did.
The same one?
I didn't even talk about it. The same one. Yeah. And I had to go find Goldschlager because I don't have a lot of that laying around the house. And I found a mini at Total Wine.
I had a little bottle at home.
That's perfect.
That's funny.
That's another one, you know, where immediately those German nihilists, I thought, he's not only a nihilist, but also a porn star and, you know, and maybe a kidnapper, you know. And I was like, this guy's just Goldschlager, you know.
And he's a kidnapper in Fargo as well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So,
well, there's a 70s and 80s, you know, era of Goldschlager and Jägermeister and all those things.
Why does Goldschlager have actually a pretty wonderful additive? I mean, if you're not drinking it, 1/4 ounce of Goldschlager is pretty fun in cocktails.
I think I could have added a little bit more. I like it the way it is, but I think I could have done a little bit more. I remember liking it.
I added a little extra Goldschlager for a very long time, and so I got it to recipe test for this book. And I was pleasantly surprised at what it could do in a cocktail when you're not just doing a shot of it, you know?
I remember bars in the late 80s or so, and the Goldschlager girls would be walking in bars and pouring for you and pouring shots. The good old days. Yes.
Angelo, what did you make?
All right. So I was torn between three.
All right. Three?
First, I was going to go with Over the Line.
Yes.
But then I know that the last couple of times we've been on, I've done something with Mezcal. So I'm like, I can't do that again. I got to do something different. So then I saw Zesty Enterprise. And I'm like, I have everything. But then I was like, but then I saw The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
And I know we've got a pretty good bottle of cognac floating around.
Nice.
I'm sorry, cognac.
Yeah.
Cognac, as we learned.
Cognac, yes. We've learned from our dear friend Dawn. Name drop number one, mine.
Dawn Davies.
Mine. First, I got the first name drop.
Nice job. Yeah, Whiskey Exchange.
So I did the Big Lebowski, 2 ounces of cognac, 1/4 ounce of Grand Marnier, because Mike was kind enough to lend me his bottle of Grand Marnier.
Nice.
Dash of Angostura, dash of orange bitters, orange peel, and a big fat cube.
Are you loving it?
It's very good.
Awesome.
It's very good, especially now that it's chilling out a little bit. The first bite was like, whoa, it's got a kick.
That's a big monster drink. I wanted to go with, you know, what would the fanciest guy have, you know?
Cognac.
Yeah.
Why not?
No, Andre, it's good. You have a drink too, Andre?
I do. I made myself a White Russian.
Hey, excellent.
But because it's spring and it's already warming up, I made it with Amarula.
What is Amarula?
Amarula is a South African cream, you know, it's like a cream liqueur, but Amarula is a little apricot-y. It's a little
interesting.
It's this Amarula fruit. It's a really fun I know you can get it in Philly for sure, because I used to get it there. Uh-huh. They'll have it.
I like the bottle.
And, of course, what's California.
The label's an elephant, I assume?
The label's an elephant. I guess the elephants eat this Amarula fruit.
Sure, why
what's
not?
The ABV on that? Is it pretty? It's like a
it's
like a
fairly low, course? I think. Right. It's 17, so that's not that bad, actually.
I think okay. That's what looks like
shelf stable.
It's shelf stable. You have to put it in the refrigerator.
Yeah, so it's fun. I was thinking. So I kind of did a split base a little bit. I did I did vodka, but you know, a normal White Russian probably is 2 ounces vodka, 1 Kahlua, splash of cream, and I did like 3/4 vodka, and then split the Kahlua and the Amarula. So, you know, rocking my creams. And I have to say, it's just absolutely delicious. So I'm just doing a weird White Russian that didn't make it into the book, but should have.
Mike, you were going to say something. I think we walked on you.
I was going to I'm amazed we have all these cocktails. And once again, we doubled up. The last time I think the same thing. Two or three of us made the same thing.
Yeah, I think the Goldschlager. Four of us made the same one.
That's right. We did. I think you're right.
That was creepy.
I think that Goldschlager was the thing that kind of.
The word is serendipitous.
I passed this one along to my better half, and she actually was like, "Ooh, that's good. What is that?"
Yeah, nice. Yeah. So, cheers.
Normally, she walks away from the scotch and the whiskey. Cheers.
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 Cheers. Cheers. Cheers.
Yeah, I the Nihilus is delicious. It really is good. Yeah. I like it.
It comes. I can see spinning it.
And that's really the bottom line, isn't it?
That's really what we're here for.
So let's chat a little bit about the movie itself.
Yeah.
You said 25 years. I had no idea that there was a connection between that and the release of your book.
Yeah.
And you have some more details on the movie itself. It's the seventh. I looked at the seventh movie from the Coen Brothers, after Blood Simple, Raising Arizona, Miller's Crossing, Barton Fink, Hudsucker Proxy, and then Fargo. That's crazy. Those right there, and then boom, they come with this.
Right,
and this is maybe the most famous one.
I know. Right. Now, yeah,
arguably,
certainly the single biggest character to come out of one of the movies.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah, yeah. So, and you had some little details about the movie itself.
Well, release date was March 6th, 1998. IMDb score, 8.1 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, 79%. Metascore, 71. Oh. The budget, according to IMDb, $15 million. Gross worldwide box office, 47.
Then, right?
47 million. Yeah, I guess it's then. Right?
Made a lot of money since then in 25 years.
We know the writers and directors, Joel and Ethan Coen. You know, the cast. Jeff Bridges as the Dude, John Goodman as Walter Sobchak, Julianne Moore as Maude Lebowski, Steve Buscemi as Theodore Donald Donnie Karabatsos.
Donnie!
Shut up, Donnie.
David Huddleston, the Big Lebowski, Philip Seymour Hoffman as Brandt, Tara Reid. I couldn't place that it was Tara Reid.
Yeah.
It threw me off. I was like, really?
Yeah.
And Tara Reid is Bunny Lebowski.
Other famous actresses applied for that part, and they went with Tara.
Yeah, wow. I read somewhere that they considered Our Girl Charlize.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Charlize was in the running. Who else is in here that's people that we would know? Peter Stormare is one of the Nihilists. Also, Uli Kunkel / Carl Hungus. Flea as Nihilist number 2. Let's see. John Turturro as Jesus Quintana.
Turturro's great.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He's incredible. He's just absolutely bonkers.
And that would not be allowed today.
What?
No.
Well,
licking
he's not Hispanic.
You can't lick bowling balls anymore.
He would not be the guy playing that role. You'd have to find someone else.
I mean, he'd mix it up. Who else is famous in here? Any other big stars? Let's see.
Amy Mann is in
there. Cameo.
Yeah. Dom Irrera as Tony the Chauffeur. He's a South Philly guy.
And Asia Carrera is in their little porn short. They actually she was the most successful porn star in the world when that movie was made for her
5 minutes in the sun. Yeah.
Yeah. She said that everyone on set was scared of her and wouldn't talk to her, but they all came up for an autograph.
That's so funny.
The one goon that shows up, not the guy that pees on the rug, but the other guy.
Who, the Chinaman?
Is Mark Pellegrino.
Who is that guy?
And he's been in a ton of TV after that. He was on Supernatural. Oh, wow. He was in Quantico. He was in a bunch of different shows. Huh. You're like, wait a minute, I know this guy from somewhere. Oh, his career took off after the movie. That's who that is.
I feel like I recognized him.
But not a Chinaman?
Not a Chinaman.
Not a Chinaman? Dude, the proper word, Asian.
It is so,
of all the people to correct him.
Yeah.
Right? It's Walter. Right.
The top seven or eight people is just, we talk about this a lot in movies we watch. It's like this amazing all-star cast.
Yeah.
And then they go on to even, greater things, right?
Yeah.
Buscemi, Jeff Bridges, my God, they're like kings of
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
He had a bit of a career after this.
He did have a little bit of a career, didn't he? Yes, he did.
As did
Julianne Moore.
The British guy who plays Knox Harrington went on to
David Foulis
movies,
Oh, yeah.
He's some sort of a sci-fi fantasy movie of some sort.
Yeah, some kind of.
I don't think it got much play. I don't think it did.
Not much. So, and you got a little bit of a synopsis there, right?
Yeah, yeah. So when the dude Lebowski is mistaken for a millionaire Lebowski, two thugs urinate on his rug to coerce him into paying a debt he knows nothing about. While attempting to gain recompense for the ruined rug from his wealthy counterpart, he accepts a one-time job with high payoff. He enlists the help of his bowling buddy Walter, a gun-toting Jewish convert with anger issues. Oh, you think? Deception leads to more trouble, and it soon seems that everyone, from porn empire tycoons to nihilists, wants something from the dude.
Now, I just have to ask, did he really enlist the help of his friend? Or does his friend just foist himself on it and then ruin just everything he touches?
Yeah, Walter was the inciting incident in this hero's journey.
It's just a mess.
Yes, he's a mess. Completely. Yes, yes. It's always one guy.
Am I wrong?
You didn't mention the porn king was Bengazzara.
Bengazzara. Yeah.
Oh, Bengazzara, that's right.
Yeah.
He was a huge actor in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
So, Mike and Angela, when did you guys last see this movie?
Last night.
Before that?
No.
I couldn't tell you the last time I saw it before I saw it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I saw a video, though.
I've seen bits of it. And when it comes on, you watch like the last couple minutes, watch a little bit, whatever, when it's on.
Yeah, it's not one that just shows up all the time.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you the last time I sat through the whole movie.
It might have been, for me, the last time I saw it was in the theater. Originally, I don't remember, but so it felt like a new movie to me. There are parts, it's such an iconic movie in pop culture, these things just show up. And that's where I know that from.
Right.
Because it's been, oh, that's where that, yes. It's weirdly enduring. It's really strange how it's endured.
And the bits of it, when it comes in the segments.
Yeah,
where you're like, oh, I totally forgot that part. Oh, I like the whole nihilists. Those guys were so funny, and you're like, I totally forgot that. I forgot how funny they were.
You know, for me, it was just even the opening of the film. He's in Ralph's. George Bush is on the TV. Like, they just swirl you right into late '90s. You know, when they asked to do this movie, I did go and watch it. You know, because I hadn't seen it for years either, and I immediately thought, this is so fresh. This could be. Now, so many movies from 1998, that's not true, or they are kind of creaky in some way. But this one was just, it just is this thing. It's kind of another one that's, not similar, but similar because it's LA and noir is like LA Confidential, which is aged incredibly well.
Yeah.
This is sort of like the funny version, the funny one of that time. But L.A. Confidential kind of brought back noir around this time, right? L.A. Confidential's late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, it was like 98. We did it a couple, last year.
And so there was this noir moment a little bit. And I watched L.A. Confidential and it's phenomenal,
Oh, yeah.
Better than even you remember it. And this was a little bit that too, where it's like, this has gone in. It's kind of a joke, It's kind of silly. The dude... People say we're saying these dudeisms for years, and then you watch the movie and you're like, it's better than I remember. The characters are well drawn, the satire is steely, just so searingly intelligent.
I was surprised how funny it was.
Yep.
Rewatching it from beginning to end, it really didn't lag anywhere, and the pacing of it was really good.
Yep.
It was not drawn out in places. Oh. It was just a really tight movie.
Tight. You know what's funny? After reading your intro, I didn't really think of it as a film noir. Yeah. Like, I'm just kind of watching it.
It is.
And then it's like, Right.
Was this in black and white? And you're you're 1940s.
Well, no, not so much that. It's just like, you know, you don't think he's like a reluctant detective, right? He just kind of stumbles up on this thing and he's trying to figure it all out.
Yeah.
You know,
those characters, those are character types that you see in those 1940s films often.
Yeah.
Right.
Take off the bathrobe and put him in a dark suit and a fedora. It's the 1940s.
That's right.
You know, and they were saying that, you know, I was trying to dig into why the White Russian, and they were basically like, you know, Sam Spade or something. If you're, you know, you're looking at a Maltese Falcon, you're looking at a Faulkner, you're looking at some of these, you know, noir writers from that time. The detective opens the drawer and it's always scotch, and that just isn't that interesting.
Right.
You know? So let's just make something.
Bite your tongue, young man.
Weird.
Bite your tongue.
No, but it's more fun.
I know what you mean.
I mean, every single thing is almost like an exquisite corpse, right? They're like, here we need this X. Let's make this X that are, you know, let's take this genre and take all the elements that are in this genre. And each one we're just going to completely mess with until you don't quite recognize it anymore, which is why it is kind of a very buried noir, because it doesn't read that way, because it's introducing you to this character that is, you know, this kind of faded out hippie.
and the one thing that I mentioned this to Angelo, I said, I watched it and I was struck by the fact there was no product placement when there easily could have been.
Yeah.
So when he's making the White Russians,
right,
it was any kind of vodka.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't see what vodka it was. When they were sitting in the bar having a beer, all the bottles were turned askew. So you could kind of see what beer it was.
Yeah.
You didn't have the label just facing you right in the face.
Yeah. Different era.
I was just really surprised because it isn't, like, boy, that pays for half the movie now.
On dairy, you know? Creamer.
Yeah. It was
nondescript everything. It was really funny.
True.
The LA part of it is fun for me. And you mentioned Ralph's early on.
Yeah.
He's in the grocery store. It's one of the brands of Kroger.
Yep.
So it's the biggest market here in LA or California probably. And he was walking down that dairy aisle of the cheeses, and that hasn't much changed in 25 years.
Right.
I was at Ralph's yesterday and it looked pretty much the same.
Right.
The tags are same. They're the generic Ralph's brand is now a different
color.
Nice color. Yeah. But those are the same things. It was like really weird.
Did you pop the quart open and just chug it? And
were you also in your jellies and bathrobe walking down the aisle? I was just wondering.
It was like 12:30 in the afternoon.
One of the crazy things about the jellies is they left Jeff Bridges to do his own wardrobe, which I guess is a thing for Jeff Bridges. And those were his jelly sandals.
He still owns them.
Yeah. He's worn them on other talk shows.
Yeah.
He's come out on other talk shows to push a movie, and you'd be like, he's still wearing jellies. I don't understand.
Little Jeff Bridges health update. I saw in the newspaper this morning. He has brain cancer.
Ooh, nice.
And his tumor has been reduced to the size of a marble. So he is.
I remember he was sick before the last movie, right? And so he's been dealing with this for a little while.
Yeah. Yes, I think that movie, what was that show on TNT?
The Old Man.
I haven't seen it yet.
The Old Man.
Is it good?
I liked it.
But it started great. The first three episodes were really good. And then for me, it fell off a cliff. I was just like, all right, I'm done.
I like him. He can do pretty much anything.
Yeah,
he's just really a great character actor, right? He's
so talented.
Yes. Why does this thing, we talked about the endurance of it, why does it persist? Why is it in our culture as long as, why has it lasted this long?
Because it's good and it's fun.
That it?
What more do you need?
Why does all this like the Zen stuff about it exist? Is it like Caddyshack? Is it like sort of beyond golf? Is it beyond, I don't know. I'm not sure why. I throw the question out.
I mean, one thing is, yeah, it's got all those elements of the dude that we know, this like Tao dude, and this guy who's sort of lazy and doesn't care and all this aesthetic. And I think one of the things that drives it is other movies have those characters, but these guys go so deep, so long on it they define it so well and so sharply.
The Coen brothers, you mean?
Yeah.
Or the,
So Jeff, you know, Jeff Bridges' character is defined so intensely, so sharply. So there are other characters in cinema like him, but he's the one, you know, that becomes this main character and really becomes this vehicle that kind of just walks right off the screen. And it's very, and they seem very self-aware about that, because, you know, even from the intro in the movie is, you know, Sam Elliott basically saying, this is an era, and sometimes there's a certain type of person that fits this era, and this person is the dude. Here you go. Here's your story about this persona. And I find that really fascinating. I find the intro and how they get you into this movie. I've watched the intro more than any other part of the movie, because they have the tumbleweed imagery. The tumbleweed comes out of the West and then goes down Hollywood Boulevard. And you get this idea that Jeff Bridges' character is this tumbleweed too. And they're playing with a lot of, you know, there's Nathaniel West in there who did tumbleweeds through LA. I mean, it's very layered what they're doing there. And then they define that character so well that it's, there's just not that many characters in cinema where you're like, whoa, the dude level characters.
Yep. I forgot about Sam Elliott. Totally forgot about him.
Yeah.
But I think you get to see him. He's not playing a slacker.
Right.
It's a lifestyle.
Right.
That's just him.
Right.
And I think he doesn't just embody the character. It's like the character embodies him. You're just it's so, like you said, they write it so deep and so well that you're not like, oh, he's just being a slacker. No, that's just him.
Yeah.
He's a guy walking around in a bathrobe all day long. He's his thing.
We've talked about Succession on this show.
Yeah.
Or the podcast many times, and about Jeremy Strong. Who is like the ultimate of actors who gets into his part.
Method
actor.
Right.
I do not see that as Jeff Bridges at all. I see him having fun with his character when he got out of bed, when he got to the set. Let's have fun with his character.
I've read a few things where he basically says that, you know, it was just him in the 70s.
Yeah. It's him, right? Yeah, a
lot of it. Smoking weed, having some drinks, just kind of chilling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's great. He's pretty talented for a Nepo baby, right?
Yeah. Well, he is a Nepo baby. Yes. By the way, speaking of, his brother, Beau Bridges, was the Grand Marshal of the Armed Forces Day Parade in my little town of Torrance, California on Saturday.
Well, that's really
the oldest Armed Forces Day Parade in the country.
That's fun.
Back after 4 years of not having one.
Beau Bridges been great for a while.
Yeah. Speaking of cocktails, did anyone make a second cocktail?
No.
No, I did. I actually made a White Russian.
There you go.
Yes.
And I have to say, it was fun going back down the White Russian trap. I remember vividly of the 70s and 80s, going to Las Vegas and drinking these nonstop at blackjack tables.
Nice.
As when drinks were free.
Fantastic memory. Nice. That's fun.
Yes. That was like, I don't know, that and what's a Black Russian?
But that's just without the cream, right?
That's the cream,
usually
right?
Without the cream. Then there's a Colorado Bulldog where you add a little shot of Pepsi, which is actually delicious.
Really?
What?
Yeah, there's a couple weird White Russian variants.
Tell me more. Keep going.
You're all fun.
Colorado Bulldog?
Yeah, Colorado Bulldog is delicious. So make a White Russian and zap it with a little soda, either Coke or Pepsi is
the normal one.
Absolutely delicious because it makes the cream a little effervescent and gives a little bitterness from the Pepsi. It's awesome. I guess.
Oh, you still do the cream?
Yeah, still do the cream.
Oh, so it's a White Russian with splash of Pepsi.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you do the cream. Interesting. I had to check on that. It's hilarious because the White Russian seems to sort of be one of those like after dinner drinks that sort of died out in the 60s. Went to Vegas and lived through the 70s and 80s, and then comes back in this movie in this big way. And it's so much fun because it's like, why is he drinking this? Other than he's such a hedonist. And when you have a White Russian, you're like, yeah, settling your stomach from being hungover the day before, lots of cream, and just, you know, really fantastically like sweet and childish.
I forgot how much Kahlua. I forgot that it was coffee in there. And it's always, it's been so long since I had it. And I, whoa, it's heavy. I don't drink coffee.
Yeah.
This is coffee.
Yeah.
This is weird.
So you're going to have an espresso tomorrow?
Buzz off it?
I might, yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's weird. It's kind of chocolatey and, you know, it brings back memories.
Yeah.
So when you were putting this book together, or now that you've gone through and you make every drink one or two times, I assume.
Yeah.
Many times. Did you have a favorite of all these? Because these are kind of spins on classic drinks in a lot of ways. So any personal favorites?
Yeah. I mean, there are some that we definitely had to work on. You know, I basically write the drinks and kind of dream them up. And then I have a guy from Philly that flies down and we basically recipe test for 3 or 4 days straight. And we did it on this one.
Oh my God.
We're guys from Philly. We're guys from Philly. I'm a little hurt.
Hey, isn't that just called a bender? That's not called recipe test. It's just a bender.
Some of them are really fun. Like, actually, the Modesty Price Receptacle, I really love because it's this riff on coffee with pineapple. Which is just sort of this weird match made in heaven. And I've pulled that trick in a couple of other of my books, but I feel like this one really turned out especially well. It's a super delicious drink.
This book feels like you can kind of go off the rails a bit.
It was definitely more off the rails. It's always funny because each one of these
cocktail-wise.
Each one of these projects, the cocktails sort of take on this, like they sort of start to breathe their own air. You know what I mean? Like, because I'm trying to keep the amount of bottles to a certain amount. And each character starts to get a liquor or liqueurs that they're call signs, you know? And this one was kind of all over the place because if you think of the characters too, though, I mean, Jesus is not going to the cocktail bar and drinking what the dude is drinking, who's not drinking what Walter's drinking, who's not drinking what Maud is drinking. Yeah. And we're talking not just style of cocktails, but they're not going to the same bar at all. And so that was kind of interesting. So this is a quite diverse one. And I just kind of hewed to each character in each scene. You know, there's some fun ones like Stay Out of Malibu. I love it when a drink comes together and it's like kind of a pun, but also just kind of silly. You know, basically the sheriff is like, you know, stay out of Malibu. And, you know, I'm like, don't stay out of Malibu. It's delicious. And it's a Malibu cocktail, you know. So I always like to play on the Coen brothers and like if they're already making a pun. I mean, one of the great things in the movie is the dude's rug ties the room together.
Yeah.
He does Tai Chi on the rug, tying the room together, right? Yep. So the Coen brothers are already being ridiculous with their language use, which I love in the movie. You know, there are a lot of puns in there, and a lot of things happen just because it sounds good in the script, I think. So, you know, tie the room together is, you know, based on the rug, but it's a Mai Tai. You know, so it's like we're in a fun zone, you know, when we're just punning back with the what the writers wanted from this book.
I like the two bunny cocktails.
She's got great cocktails.
One is the green nail polish and the other one is a Viva Las Vegas tribute. It's the Hawaii.
Yes.
You know, they were but your spin on them is interesting. Like you didn't just make a Blue Hawaii, or you didn't just make a Midori Sour or something. You actually made something totally different.
I really actually worked quite hard on those because she's sort of in that zone, you know, the colored drink, girly drinks, and they can be bad. So you want them to be balanced. You want them to be good. You want them to be funny. You want them to be interesting. That Midori drink for her with the toenail is one of the early ones that I came up with. It was like, let's do this. Let's hang on this green toenail polish. It's gross. It's strange, but it's so fascinating that how can we not focus on it, you know? And that's another one of my favorite ones from this book. This book definitely has all of the Midori and Curacao, you know, Curacao and Kahlua and all
of
these
sort of
backbench, these sort of actually front benchers from the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
But backbenchers now.
Galliano.
And they're great. They're great modifiers. Yeah. So, and also the food in this book was really fun to do.
Yeah, too. I was going to say that next. I really like the Lincolnberry pancakes.
Yes,
it was so pigs in a blanket. That was just so funny.
Avocado latkes.
Just a simple set of nachos.
I thought of you making that recipe, Aaron. What is a good cocktail? What is a good cocktail food from Southern California that's also Jewish? And I thought of you while making that. I was like, it's avocado toast as a latke. That's what we're doing here.
That is such a smart idea. I mean,
it's delicious too.
I'm sure it is. I mean, God, it looks so good. It's easy to make, right?
If I can make a recipe in there for you, that would be it.
No, you did it.
By the way, I am fascinated by Donnie's ashes.
Yes. Donnie's ashes. Yeah.
The only thing that would keep me from doing it, though, I really don't like a salt rim glass.
Oh, a quarter salt rim.
Yeah, just to put it on there.
Just to put it on there. Yeah. That one was funny. I was trying to do Donnie's ashes. You know, I went down a lot of rabbit holes, which there are many in this movie.
Yeah.
And one of the funny ones, one of the fascinating ones, you know, there's all these like philosophy, you know, guys that they're like masters, PhDs in philosophy, and then they write a book about Big Lebowski. A little bit like The Matrix, right? You know, totally. The Matrix is just Descartes, you know, Lebowski is just XYZ. But one of the most famous ones is that Donnie is a ghost and only Walter can see him. And people have gone down this road and have written basically dissertations about how Donnie is a ghost and only Walter can see him. Of course, the Coen brothers are like, well, the dude does address him and he dies. but it was a funny one. So I really wanted to focus. The other one, of course, is that in Coen brother lore, Steve Buscemi's body gets abused more in each movie. So that
why does Miller's, he always die?
In Miller's Crossing, he dies. And then in Fargo, he gets in the chipper vac. And by the Ludwig Lebowski, he's, you know, cremated. So. Okay. There's all these funny, weird lore out there. So I kind of became a little bit obsessed with Donnie's ashes. And I also just really, really wanted to have a Folgers jar from Ralph's as a
cup. Can you get a small coffee can just, as a cup? It's just as what you drink it out of?
Yeah, it was just a personal goal there. If you're going to say modestly priced receptacle, you have to have a cocktail for it.
Do you feel different, better, worse, seeing the movie now, 25 years later, and going through this process? How do you feel about the movie now?
After the process?
Yeah.
It did change. I mean, I really appreciate the depth of these guys. I really, really do. As like, you know, I write cocktail books, but it's all language. And the language that they use, you know, when you get into the script, it's just really fun. I mean, all that Port Huron statement. I mean, there's all these things they have in there, right, that they just don't need to have, but they want to have because of their just layering and layering and layering and layering. And the amount of work that they put into it made my job easy. So I just thought, you know, I could have gotten into this project and gotten 25 cocktails in and really kind of stalled out because it was super, the movie's superficial. The characters don't have that much more to say, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was really easy to get to 50. And I admire, you know, I did 50, 60 cocktails for Batman. That was 80 years of Batman characters. You know, you're never going to run out. I could write two more Batman books, right. You know, and never run out. So there was a concern there that, you know, this is a really finite thing. This isn't even a show. This isn't a series. This isn't a thing. This is, you know, it has basically seven major characters kind of, and, you know, we could be in trouble. And, you know, I could have gone on much longer. And it, you know, with a lot of other suggestions and ideas. So I just admire the movie. And it also came at a time, you know, I feel like this last winter was pretty grim and the spring was grim with still coming out of COVID and all this stuff. And this book and movie is just this blast of joy. It's a beautiful, you know, I don't get, I write the script and then I get some feedback about stuff, but when the cover came in and the pictures came in, it just made me happy. You know, and I have many emotional responses to my books. happy and joyful is not always at the top. And, you know, they're, you know, cool or blah, blah, or I'm done or whatever. But the book is really joyful. And it's his, the book, I think, is with the great illustrations, is the movie is so escapist. It is a movie that if you are having a bad day and you watch, you will be changed into a new mood that is better. No matter, I mean, it is really a mood shifting movie, I think. And in an intelligent way, you know, not just some kind of like time life, you know, feel good movie, but the movie's really intelligent and moves you in a positive direction. And it's smart. And I hope that the book is the same. It was a really joyful project. I don't know that how many cocktail books are funny. I mean, some of them that are puns or whatever are funny, but I feel like this is a cocktail book that's funny, and it was a really great opportunity to do that.
There's a bit of a cartoon quality to the movie.
Yeah,
right. Sure. They're not cartoon characters necessarily, but there's color, there's action.
Yep.
There's comedy. There's sounds.
Chain sequences.
All of that.
Yeah.
And the layout of the book and the illustration sort of mesh with that really well.
Yeah.
Your illustrator is awesome.
The illustrator is awesome. It's Jennifer Hines. She's in Amsterdam, and from picture concept one, you know, they would send me concepts before she'd even flesh it out. And I'm just laughing and I'm like, I don't know who this person is, but you have found, she's just nailing these scenes.
Yeah. So you would just send her the whatever you wrote up, and then she would just give you an illustration based upon what she read?
Yeah, it all went through the editor. So she ended getting the script, you know, or getting the manuscript while I was working on it. And then she would, you know, have a couple ideas, and the editor would say, hey, what do you think about these ideas? And have me check them for, you know, basically like color and garnish and make sure that the drinks looked the way that they should look. And just every idea was just laugh out loud funny, you know, all the little props she has, or, you know, there's one, I think Zesty Enterprise, there's a pregnancy test in that image, you know, I'm just like, this is just great. You know, she's really thought, I mean, you know, she added the depth to the pictures that are there in the script.
I have a small live update since we're doing this live tonight.
Yeah.
My wife is at Barnes & Noble at the moment. Nice. She just sent me a picture. I'll see if I can just show you this picture. She is in the drink section, I believe.
Oh,
there's the Andre Darlington section, I believe.
Whoa! Look at that. Barnes & Noble. Where's that?
That's in Torrance near the
DeLorme. Torrance Barnes & Noble. I got to reach out to them and be like,
yeah. It's great, isn't it?
For a talk.
Yeah. And I know our friend Shauna,
that's
Minty.
Fantastic.
She does social media for the barkeeper. Bar shop in Los Feliz, I believe, and they have a whole book section, and now you're prominently displayed there as well.
Amazing. So it was funny. So I get a few, you know, advanced copies, and you guys get it through the publicist. And I had gone, you know, last time we visited, we were able to
hang out together. Yeah,
yeah. I visited Joe during an afternoon, and he was wonderful. And I had hopes of, you know, this book is an LA book. And it still might happen, but I had hopes of, you know, making it out there and doing an event. So I sent him a copy and I just said, thank you for having me for the afternoon. And of all the books that should be signed at your shop barkeeper, this is up there. So that warms my heart to hear that he's carrying a couple, because this is such an LA movie, you know.
Totally. Just seeing the In-N-Out Burger was so funny. Yeah. It almost seemed like, was there In-N-Out 25 years ago? Yeah, I guess there was.
Yeah, they made In-N-Out in the 60s, 50s, late
50s. Yeah. Oh, God, too funny. So what's up next? Are we doing a Raising Arizona book?
I would, yes.
Wouldn't that be great?
For sure. I don't have a physical copy of it, but otherwise I do a cover reveal right here. But this fall, comes out October 3rd, is it's called A Booze and Vinyl Christmas.
Oh,
you mentioned this before.
Yeah, you talked about this before.
45 of the greatest holiday albums in wax. It's got everything in there, from sugar plum recipes to – and well, what was really fun is you know, they wanted to do a new Booze and Vinyl, and we were chatting about it, and it was like, let's not just do a volume 3. We did a volume 2, which is very different from volume 1. Let's do something different. And somebody brought up a Christmas book, and it was such a great opportunity for me. I have not written a winter's drinks cocktail book. So this overlaps, right? So I get to talk, I get to do my booze and vinyl thing, but I also got to do some really great winter drinks. So
is it Christmas songs or Christmas albums?
Christmas albums. So everything from Barbra Streisand to Sia to, you know, Harry Connick Jr. to, you know, Nat King Cole to the Nutcracker. I was going to
say, you got to have Nat King Cole.
Yeah. To,
Adam Sandler?
You know, Adam Sandler.
Is there food also?
But yes, there's some food. You know, just like the booze and vinyls. There's, you know, maybe 16 food recipes in it.
Okay. How many albums did you go with?
Super excited. We're doing it. We want to do a little, so the booze and vinyls are all 70. This one we settled on 45.
Okay.
So 45 of the greatest Christmas albums, which was a nice number because there's not that many. There's everyone's done a Christmas album.
Now is it 45? Is it 45s?
It'd no, that would be fun. That would be fun.
45. A side and B side on the 45s.
Yeah. You know my books are selling well if they let me do a 45s book.
I can see
Not yet. So I'm super excited by that. I'm gonna do a little tour for that book. So that's a new booze and vinyl, you guys, this fall.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. That sounds so fun. Great for the holidays, right?
Yeah.
And you gotta get that done like kind of quick, right? How far along
it's
are
done.
You?
It's done.
Oh, it's done.
Yeah, it's done. It's printed. I just don't have a copy yet. They're in the mail basically. So we're sort of starting to kick it off. We'll probably do some kind of like Christmas in July thing where we kick it off. Because, you know, selling for the holidays is a very abbreviated season to sell your book.
It starts in June.
And it's a peculiar book because it's 45 versions of Joy to the World. And it's all eggnog. Is that what you did? It's just eggnog cocktails.
Eggnog. Plug in there.
It's just be eggnog.
Certainly. Right? That's well, eggnog. There you go.
A little boozy eggnog in there.
Eggnog. Holiday punch, eggnog.
Yeah, is there a non-boozy eggnog or punch?
Is there an egg? Is there a non-boozy eggnog? I mean, isn't eggnog by definition boozy?
It should
be. You can make it without, right?
Yeah,
but then it's not. Right. Then it's just
the crap you buy in the store, right?
That's just flavored milk. Then at that point,
pretty much, right?
It's nutmeg milk.
That's all it is. I'm just saying, it's like non-alcoholic beer. Why? Yeah. Why?
That's the point.
We all know that we can like NA all year long, but at the holidays, we need
it. There's no NA.
Oh, you really need NA. Oh yeah, NA
is NA. Your family is coming. You are having.
You need A, not NA. Yes.
Right. You do A. You do A. You don't do NA. And then when after the holidays, you go to AA.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
That's quitter talk.
Now, this is my holiday therapy book to help everybody get through.
Well, I say Big Lebowski is a summertime.
It's fun
to get us through. Yeah. Right. This would be fun for parties and backyard get-togethers and things, barbecues,
exactly. Lebowski viewing parties, in the backyard.
Parties,
set up
right?
Put up the big sheet. Your inflatable,
right?
Clean.
Right,
that's right,
right.
I
you know, Aaron, you could do a Lebowski like tiki night in your backyard with your new Bataan furniture.
Could do that. Yes, I could.
With your new Bataan furniture.
That's right. I could do that. You know, I watched this with my daughter, who's 20-ish, let's say. And she had never heard of it, let alone seen it. Yeah. And I think she was a little bit, what is this? But she was laughing. There was definitely, this was fun. It was good to turn it on to another generation.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts, boys, on the movie?
Oh, it's just a good time. It's just a really good time. Yeah. The cameos are great, just to all the people that show up. John Goodman is just tremendous.
We didn't talk about John Goodman at all.
We didn't talk about him enough. Because,
oh my God.
When you start really getting into the script and watching the movie a couple of times, you start to realize this dude is an incredible character. But actually, John Goodman's really carrying the movie.
He runs the movie. Yeah.
He's the driving force behind.
He's the catalyst, right?
Well, that's because his friends were face down in the muck. That's why. If they hadn't been face down in the muck, he wouldn't be that guy.
The dude was upset about the rug. He wasn't going to do anything until Donnie talked him into going to see Lebowski, right?
He moves the story forward. That's right.
Oh, yes. I forgot. Yeah, one of the other favorite cocktails in here was, you know, the movie was shown on Time Life or something in the 90s. And they had to change the words from.
They
had to change the words. This is what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps, right?
Yeah.
The car. So, and that became a famous Phoebe Bridges had a very well right. well received album that she called by that title. So I did do a Genepi cocktail called "This Is What Happens When You Find a Stranger in the Alps." That's another just funny. I mean, this only this movie could generate this kind of just you know. Pop
again, it's the cartoonish of it, cartoony. Yeah. There's so much. The dialogue is so critical, yeah. and the scenes and the color. There's so much. It just lends itself to kind of this what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
And maybe some of the other Coen Brother books movies don't do that. This one definitely does.
This one definitely does it. Right? Well, I mean, one of the things also to talk about is the Starlight's Hollywood Bowling Alley, and, and the Coen Brothers found the last bowling alley that still had analog scoring. Even in 1998, there just weren't that many bowling alleys left. They're all gone. I mean, they're all gone now. Yep. And Star Lanes is gone. But the lights with the stars on the side of the outside of the wall. It's very interesting to watch specifically those scenes and when they show that those stars up there. And it's usually when those guys are being their most loser, right? So it's really interesting. It's like Hollywood star bowl lanes, but then it's always the scene where, you know, Walter's pulled a gun and they're outside.
Yeah, pulls a gun. Mark it a zero.
Or they're getting, you know, the nihilists are beating them up. And then it'll like pan up to this like, remember, they're supposed to be in glamour, you know? Yeah, yeah. Just fantastic use of the bowling alley.
You know, actually, I like the opening shots in the bowling alley. You know, the opening credits?
Yes.
Where they're just, the way they pan the camera down the lane and everybody just goes in sequence, you know, taking their turn.
Yeah.
You know, the guy spraying the shoes in slow-mo.
Gorgeous.
It's just great. I mean, and they got Roger Deakins, who is like, you know, he's been their director of photography on like a lot of his, on most of their movies.
Yep.
Since like the mid 90s. The guy's fantastic.
I just watched the movie again not too long ago, and I'd forgotten that in the dream sequence, Saddam Hussein is the shoe guy, the shoe rental guy.
Oh, that's funny. I don't remember.
And they put a camera in the ball.
Yeah.
So as the ball rolled, you kept getting this disorienting view of the ball going down there.
So well shot.
The bowling alley. I have not been in a bowling alley probably since my kids were little. And I'm sure now it's like this crazy, like, I don't know, too much noise, too much lights.
Yeah.
You know, crazy now, right?
Yeah.
That bowling alley is the bowling alley of our youth, right?
The analog, the wood.
Yeah.
The wood totally. And the leather shoes, you know?
Yes.
And
drawing
and,
your hands on screens.
You know, now I think it's all screens for the scoring, digital. And making it really fancy.
Don't forget, then they put the black lights out.
Yeah, the lunar bowl.
It's like the glow party.
You play it when you're bowling. And loud music, and it's all in dark. It's all different. Yeah. Not like we were used to, right?
You know, it's amazing when the sound, you know, the shoes and just the analog of it, the ball on that wood.
Needs to be a book about bowling alleys, about movies or TV. Just bowling alleys are so great to shoot in. The old bowling alleys, at least. Not now, but yeah, totally. Well, we have come to the end of a wonderful segment with a show with our friend Andre Darlington, who has come on to talk about his new book, the unofficial Big Lebowski cocktail book.
Market Zero.
You can see all
Don't cross the line.
Marked where I'm gonna make cocktails.
I love it
on Amazon and bookstores near you. Like I could, as I said, at Barnes and Noble. Andre, we can't thank you enough.
Thank you guys for having me on again. This was fantastic. I'm so excited to be on. This was such a fun book. I can't wait to be back, you guys.
Yeah. Well, we got to talk before Christmas time.
Yeah.
We got to talk that Christmas book when it comes out. Yeah. So
this is like a tradition now.
Like, it is a tradition. Yes, it is.
And I see you Absolutely. Guys.
It's That's like, right.
Oh, Absolutely. Books out.
Hey, are you coming to Philly for the tour? For the Bosom
I hope so. I hope so. There will be something in the Northeast for sure, in New York and Philly probably. And
all right, cool.
Usually D.C. So, yeah.
Excellent. Great. Excellent.
We'll have to go to Polizzi.
We've been saying this. We got to make it happen.
I still have my card.
Sounds good.
All right. And you want to take us out?
Yep, I will. Andre, thank you. Hang around. Don't leave. We're just going to run the end credits and we'll, you know, end the show. Cheers, folks.
Cheers.
If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com And if you have any questions, comments, show or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.